Welcome to the Are You Menstrual podcast, where we dive deep into all things women's health to support you on your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalbo, functional and integrative dietitian, also known as the Hormone Healing RD. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to keep learning, check out the podcast Patreon, where I share a bonus episode with additional downloadable resources each week. You can go to patreon.com/hormonehealingRD or check out the link in the show notes. All right, I have an amazing episode for you today. I'm doing the intro after, just recorded it with Carrie. It was so good. I'm excited to share this with you. In this episode, I am interviewing Carrie Bennett, and she's going to teach you about light, circadian rhythm, and specifically how these impact your hormones. We're definitely looking at this from more of a hormonal lens. And if you do not know who Carrie Bennett is, I think you will probably be as obsessed with her after this as I am. She's amazing. She is a really great practitioner. Her story, I think, is a lot of women can relate to. She was a college athlete. She was definitely at the pinnacle of health, supposedly, which is very similar to my story. And she started suffering from chronic joint issues and insomnia, which I feel like we kind of gets normalized. And then after her firstborn child, she started developing debilitating stomach pain, adrenal fatigue, brain fog. She talks more about this in the episode. But it really was a brought her to a point in her health where she's like, how can I fix this? And she does have a bachelor's in biology and a master's in nutrition. She was a personal trainer, a massage therapist, so she was a body worker as well. She has a very unique background that just brings everything together so beautifully. Breath coach, and she could not figure out the root of her issue. She did see some like success, but she still was like, I'm still not feeling as good as I feel like I should. And, you know, meanwhile, she's like working one-on-one with people, helping other people improve their health. And then she stumbled upon quantum biology. And now she is an online educator, clinician, and faculty member of the Quantum Biology Collective. Carrie's mission is to teach her clients how to create a healing environment by applying quantum health strategies around light, water, electrons, and mitochondrial support. And given these tools, clients who have spent years trying to improve their health, just like Carrie did, finally experience powerful healing and lasting benefits. She's super passionate, and she's a really great educator. You know, sometimes the topics are dense. When talking about circadian rhythm, we do get into like hormones and stuff. I think that her analogies are easy to understand. You may have to listen to this episode twice. I tried to make this as simple and straightforward as possible, but it's a big topic, but I feel like we deserve to understand this kind of information. And I tried to like summarize and reiterate things to keep it all simple. So hopefully that helps throughout. The main areas that we covered, we talked about what circadian rhythm is and why it's important for our health, especially our hormones. We then get into how light exposure impacts our circadian rhythm. And then Carrie really digs into how can we optimize our circadian rhythm in the modern world, which was the big goal. There's a lot of practical takeaways and things that I'm hoping you guys can all start doing during this episode. And then we talk about how light exposure and in the winter months, how we can support healthy light exposure and have a healthy circadian rhythm and how that can shift in the winter months and how it's supposed to shift during that time. So I really hope you guys enjoy this one. As always, everything shared in this episode is for informational purposes only. I encourage you to do your own research, talk to your healthcare provider and figure out what's best for you. But thank you for listening and I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome, Carrie. Thank you so much for being here. I am incredibly excited to do this interview. It feels like when I interviewed Irene Lyon and I was like, you know, kind of nervous and really excited leading up to it. I'm so inspired by your work. I think that you do a really good job at education, providing the science, but making it digestible, which can be incredibly challenging. So I'm thrilled to have you here today. Do you want to give people a little bit of your background and how you got into the light circadian rhythm stuff, quantum biology?
Yeah. And Amanda, I'm so excited to chat with you. Thank you for having me. And I'm really grateful because this stuff was life-changing for me. So I'm really excited to share this with more people. So yeah, you know, like, I guess my journey is a very typical journey that one takes when they're looking to heal their bodies, right? Something's wrong. And whether you get a diagnosis or you just have a constellation of symptoms where you don't feel great and you're searching for answers, that was me, right? You know, and I could slowly see it evolve actually from college onward where my joints got deteriorated. I had really horrible bouts of insomnia. But I reached a point after my first child was born where I couldn't eat anything without just massive stomach pains and horrible digestion. And then the fatigue would set in, you know, and I just would felt like I was kind of like walking through life where I was in a dark movie theater and my eyes could close at any time. But you know, that's tough, right? Cause new mom, well, you know, and then I'm also dealing with a child who didn't sleep either. Like he wouldn't sleep. So he had kind of an insomnia as well, or was very challenging. Let's say like, you know, the ones where you bounce them for 3 hours only to sleep for 20 to 40 minutes. Oh. And so there I am up at night then too, like trying to search for answers. And so there's a lot of things that I tried in order to support myself. I have a background as a personal trainer. I went to massage therapy school. And in the midst of all this, I also got a master's degree in clinical nutrition. And so I felt like I was very well equipped to help myself, help my child. And I tried to implement all the things, you know, like the elimination diet, the gut health protocol, you know, appropriate movement and mindfulness. And I felt a little better, but it wasn't anything life-shattering or earth-shattering for me. And I thought to myself, there has to be something even more fundamental and foundational that regards to health than what I'm aware of right now. I just had this nagging feeling. And so one night as I was, you know, scrolling my phone, trying to figure out why my child wasn't sleeping and what was wrong with me and how to support us, I stumbled across a blog by a neurosurgeon named Jack Cruz, who really started connecting dots about how light was impactful to health. And I got to chat a little bit before we hit record. As we were talking, like, yes, light was mentioned before, you know, in terms of fluorescent lights really aren't necessarily, you don't feel great under fluorescent lighting, or yeah, it's important to get that morning light because it can help balance hormones, but it was kind of glossed over. So I had heard about light, but no one had gone into light the depth with which I had learned, starting with Dr. Cruz and then all of the amazing researchers I dove into, Dr. Wunsch, other biophysicists who talked about light and things like water in our bodies. So I went down that rabbit hole, right? That's called quantum biology. And I've never left. I am still deep in the hole because I started to apply things related to light and using light to support my body and my circadian rhythm. And within 3 days, I was myself again, like 3 days. And that's not a unique story. Believe it or not, I've had many people who have contacted me and been like, I couldn't work, or I was, you know, just walking through life in a fog. And then after 3 days of really implementing these things, I could tell there was a difference. I've gained my life back. And so I knew it wasn't just a random thing and that this needed to get brought to the masses. And so I've been really excited just to educate people and inform people about light and their light environment and this, you know, burgeoning field we call quantum biology and how that can be applied for health.
So awesome. And I can attest to the light thing. I shared this. I did like a pregnancy update and kind of compared my two pregnancies in an episode, which was fun. But a big shift I made postpartum for sure, but then it kind of like went away. Like I got started with the light stuff because I wanted my daughter to have good circadian rhythm and I wanted her to sleep and she did. She slept so much at night. And I was like, okay, it was, you know, that was a really good motivator when you have a newborn. But then I started working more and my light exposure went down, right? It's just like trying to find a new routine. We had a nanny for a little bit. And so it was like, totally changed up my routine. I didn't even like think about the light piece. I was like not really thinking about it. And then we ended up conceiving again. And I have a whole history with thyroid health, hypothyroidism. And that's like kind of my first main concern when I found out I was pregnant. And my labs looked good before, but then I started implementing more of the light stuff again, because that was in like June. And that's when I was starting to dig in to all this light stuff. I found you on some random podcast. And I was like, oh my gosh, like Carrie Bennett, this is like the information that it's like, again, things I kind of knew, but I'm like, this is really important. Why don't I focus on this more? Why is this not a bigger thing for me? And so I made it one, and my thyroid labs, when I did them during my first trimester, better than they have looked in like 7 to 8 years.
That's amazing.
I'm not taking meds. I am doing a small dose of iodine, so I'm still nursing my other daughter. But I was like, oh my gosh, I really think I like crazy intentional about the light. So I really think that has had a big difference in this pregnancy, and I feel really good. I did a lot of prep and stuff going into it on gut health, because that was like an issue in my first pregnancy. But I really cannot be like, listen, everyone, I know that it can seem like it can be really difficult and challenging. And we're going to talk about all that stuff and how you can, Carrie makes this very practical. And we're going to do a Q&A for Patreon. So we have a ton of great questions there, but we're going to cover a lot in this episode and we're going to teach you how to apply this to your life and make it realistic. You don't have to spend hours outside. If you can, cool, but you absolutely do not have to, but it really does make a difference. And I have to like share my kind of testament to that too, because I can totally relate to everything you went through.
Oh, that's so cool. And yeah, it's really inspirational, I think, for people to hear stories like that, to be able to say, okay, all right, this is something I really want to try. It's not something I've tried before. So maybe this can shift my health in that correct, the direction I want to see it move. Yeah. So yeah, I love light. Where do you want to start with light? Where do you want to start?
So let's talk about light exposure. I mean, in its relation to like, what is circadian rhythm? Just like tell people what is that? How does light impact that? And then why does this matter for our hormones? Why should we care if we have hormone concerns?
Okay. Yeah. That's a perfect question. I love it. So I would say number one, we have built into our bodies something called a circadian rhythm, which just means that we've got a body clock that measures a 24-hour day. So it knows that there's a period of daylight and it knows that there's a period of darkness. And it gets more specific than that. It knows that as the day is starting and the day is getting to the midpoint, and then that the day is ending. And the reason why that's important is because I've got so many cells running literally 100,000 tasks every single second of every single day. And if I didn't have something coordinating all of that, like a signal that was telling my body what to do when, it would be utter chaos. And so that's what my circadian rhythm is. It is the director of all the cells of my body, the organizer. I liken it to, you know, the conductor of a symphony, or, you know, the air traffic control tower, where yes, you know, the planes can arrive and land it, but it might look, or land and take off, it might look like a disaster, that like not an airport that I would want to fly out of. And so same thing with my body. I've got this control tower that tells time called my suprachiasmatic nucleus, which you just think of that as a clock in your brain. And that clock in my brain communicates via vibration or oscillation. That's a fast form of communication in the body. It signals hormones and it supports hormones, but it has instantaneous communication to every cell via a vibration. And that vibration then changes based on the time of day that my eyes perceive. And so how does that happen? Well, my eyes actually have in the backs of my eyes, if I were like to cut the eyeball in half, right, you would see in the backs of the eyes these little sensors for light. And in particular, there's a bunch of sensors for a specific color of light called blue light. And so we've all seen light split through a rainbow or through a prism. It's like, yes, there is a chunk of that light coming from the sun that has the color blue. But that blue light coming from the sun is the perfect light to sense and tell time, because that light varies very predictably by not being present in, like during dawn, right? During the early morning hours, there's no blue light that's being picked up by the sensors in the backs of my eyes, to the sun rises over the horizon and now blue light starts to appear, to blue light elevates its amount and intensity all day long until the sun reaches its high point in the sky at solar noon. And then it goes back down until after sunset, when the sun crosses the horizon, no blue light is being picked up. So that's how I can tell time. My eyes capture the varying amounts of blue light photons. Those blue light photons then, and those sensors have a direct pathway, fancy word, retinohypothalamic tract, a fancy pathway, but it's a direct link from my eye to the clock in my brain. So that's how I tell time. My eyes pick up the amount of blue light in my environment. They communicate that to the clock in my brain, which oscillates. And then my cells have a sensor for it. I've got clock genes and things like that that need to know the time in order to say, oh, run this program, shut that program down, make this protein, don't make that protein. All of that comes into play based on the oscillations from the clock in my brain, including things like hormone release. And that's, I think, where we want this discussion to go.
Yeah. And even it's like, I feel like people kind of know circadian rhythm. It's like, okay, it's a clock and my everything shifts in my body around that time. Like even your gut bacteria, people think about like detoxification. Yes, it happens a lot, primarily at nighttime, right? So all these shifts are happening and it's because we're getting that signal from the light in our environment. That was beautiful. Hopefully people grasp that. You might have to rewind and listen to it a few times. That's typically what I do with podcasts with Carrie. I'm like, wait, that was such a good analogy. I need to go back and listen again. Let's talk about that. And we're going to go into like different, how we're getting that blue light in our eyes. We have a lot of questions from the Q&A going into like, okay, do I have to not wear glasses, all that sort of thing. Your eyes are, this is why your eyes are so important. It's not just our skin. It's because the eyes are taking in that signal and communicating with the rest of your body. So I just want to reiterate that. So let's talk about the hormone signaling. So we're getting this information, our body's getting the information. What kind of hormones is it signaling, especially when we first wake up?
Yeah. So, you know, I think most of us have heard we get a cortisol surge in the morning, or we have a cortisol awakening response, or we should, right? And that was part of my issues actually with health, like adrenal fatigue. I had flatlined cortisol all day long. So this was a really keen interest of me to go into and kind of test and see. And what happens is when the sun crosses the horizon and that blue light starts to get picked up by my eyes and talks to my brain, that clock in my brain has a very close connection to a part of my brain called the hypothalamus. And so literally it's right above the hypothalamus. So as soon as the day starts and that clock starts to oscillate, the hypothalamus wakes up and says, it's morning. Let's kickstart some really key pathways in the morning. One of which is called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is where the hypothalamus communicates to the pituitary gland, communicates to our adrenal glands to make cortisol. And so we get this beautiful cortisol surge. But what most people don't know is that it's not cortisol that's first influence with that pathway. In that pathway, and then also the pathway involving the reproductive organs as well. So the hypothalamic pituitary reproductive axis also gets signaled. And the mitochondria, which are just, they're organelles that live inside of those cells in those glands, they first make a master hormone at that time of day called pregnenolone. And if anyone has ever worked with hormones or hormone imbalances, like you might have seen, like pregnenolone is like up here in terms of this cascade of all the different steroid hormones and sex hormones we have. And so that pregnenolone then is what becomes cortisol. It surges into cortisol in the morning, but then it gets ferried out to become a balanced amount of the other steroid hormones. So it becomes DHEA, it becomes estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. All of those steroid hormone pathways really get upregulated and balanced first thing in the morning. And so if we consistently miss that morning light signal, that pathway is underactive. That pathway gets downregulated or dysregulated. And so we're not making that pregnenolone. And so then all of a sudden we're trying to have energy and make cortisol. It's not happening. We're trying to get pregnant. It's not happening because we're lacking the light signaling to tell our body to do just that.
I love that. And it's like, and I know like Carrie's mentioning all the hormones and stuff. I wouldn't even worry about that, but it's like, it affects your sex hormones, it affects your stress hormones. And those are probably two of the topics that I get the most questions about. We like to isolate them, right? We love to, oh, I have low cortisol or I have high cortisol. I have low estrogen, high estrogen, low progesterone, whatever it is. We like to isolate them, but I think this is a perfect, light is a beautiful example in circadian rhythm of how they really do all work together and they're going to impact each other. Can you talk about thyroid health and how the light will impact that thyroid health, especially in the morning?
Yeah. So there, that same hypothalamic pituitary communication, those two pathways kickstart a bunch of other pathways in the body. They're called axes or paths. So that hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis also gets kickstarted in the morning. And so you get this, that the hypothalamus saying, okay, pituitary gland, make TSH. The pituitary gland knocks on the thyroid gland and says, okay, let's start making a thyroid hormone. And so that happens in the morning as well and gets optimized a little later in the morning. So while the pathway gets kickstarted with that kind of what I call sunrise eyes, it gets kickstarted then. It gets optimized a little later when the sun gets a little higher. When the sun reaches a little higher in the sky, you get UV light to appear. And that UV is a really important light signal, again, through the eyes, because it starts to optimize the conversion of tyrosine into thyroid hormone. And so that's where you get a really good thyroid support, is where you optimize what I call UVA rise in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've played around with the circadian app at all, but yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's a great app that you can get where you can plug in your location and you can see these times that I'm talking about. Like, when is sunrise? When is UVA rise? When is sunset? And you can start to say, oh, okay, let me get outside during some key windows, or let me block light at certain times as well, the artificial light, in order to optimize and balance all of these systems.
And thyroid's like such an interesting one too, especially when you think about like how it gets produced throughout the day. Cause then it's like, oh, well, when I get my blood work done, I just test it whenever. And that's, I always ask, what time of day did you get these test results done? It's so important. It can have a huge impact on like what your TSH level. People don't realize, I'm like, it fluctuates throughout the day. It's not just like one flat level that you have like for 6 weeks straight until you get your labs retested. So I think that's like such a fun thing to kind of highlight and bring to life, like, oh, okay, so that's a lot of that's happening in the morning. And we'll go into more like UVA light and stuff. So we have this circadian rhythm, this clock right in our brain. It is communicating via the light signals that it's getting, and it's leading to all these hormonal cascades, stress hormones, sex hormones, thyroid hormones. It's so important, right? Now let's bring it to our environment, which is where I think most people struggle, because most people I think are very removed from getting a lot of natural light exposure, and it's just kind of become accepted and the norm. And I totally get it. I mean, I worked clinical positions for a very long time before I had my own business. And then, you know, you start your own business and I feel like I was outside even less, because you're trying to figure out what the heck you're doing. And you taking on way too many clients and all that stuff, you know, the growing pains. So even then, it's like, it can be very challenging no matter what kind of job you work. But let's talk about how the blue light in our environment. So we're talking about blue light from the sun that we're getting, how that kicks off signals. How does the blue light in our environment, especially like indoor, impact that circadian rhythm? Like, why should we care about it?
You know, yes, it's a great question, Amanda. And it's because of the fact that that blue light is such a timekeeper, right? And it's always changing from sunrise to solar noon to sunset. When we're dealing with artificial light, whether it's coming from bulbs or screens and devices, that light it never changes. It has a very big, what's called blue amount and intensity of blue coming from it. Like, I could take this fun little device called a spectrometer and it'll show me the blend of light coming from anything. And you point it at a screen, it's like blue, a ton of blue. It basically signals, that amount of blue signals our body that it's the middle of the afternoon. And it never changes. So it's kind of like being stuck in like this time warp, right? Where you're just like in this chaotic signaling where the brain's like, okay, it's still the middle of the afternoon. Okay, we just slept, but all of a sudden it's the middle of the afternoon. Oh, we're going to bed, but I think it's the middle of the afternoon. And so you can kind of understand what chaotic signaling can happen because of the intensity of that blue light that never changes.
Thyroid health is essential for healthy hormones, digestion, energy, and more. Our thyroid is so important because it sets the metabolic pace of our body, which controls how every single system functions. Whether you think you may have some thyroid dysfunction going on based on symptoms you may have, or have a confirmed diagnosis, chances are you haven't been given the best tools to address your thyroid health. I've been there. Thyroid is a big part of my health journey and something I've been optimizing for the last decade. I'm very passionate about this topic, which is why I created a free thyroid training that walks you through how to assess thyroid health, all the labs. I do cover blood work and what the optimal ranges are. I just want to say that I think we have to look beyond blood work when it comes to assessing our thyroid health. That's why I also cover hair mineral testing, urine testing, and then basal body temperature, which is a measurement you can do at home to assess your thyroid health. I've had so many people reach out and say they can't believe that this training is free. I promise you won't be disappointed. I also cover nutrition tips for optimizing thyroid health. You can head to the link in the show notes or to my website, hormonehealingrd.com, to watch the training. There's just so much lacking when it comes to helpful info on thyroid health. So I'm really hoping that this training helps you and fills that gap. Yeah. And I think like, so if we think about like what ideally, what would, because we're going to talk about how we can mitigate this blue light, right? Like how can we practically do this in our day-to-day life? But before we get there, what would be like an optimal day of light exposure for the average person? And it doesn't have to be like according to any schedule, a job or anything, but it's like, what would be considered enough, adequate in order to get your brain that signaling from the light and get matching up your body's clock with the light outside?
Sure. That's a great question. So, I always say it's about consistency more than anything. So I would rather you do these small amounts that I'm talking about consistently most days than just on a Saturday, get 2 hours outside first thing in the morning, right? It doesn't work as well that way, believe it or not. And so first and foremost, we're going to have to block the artificial light when the sun isn't out. So that means before sunrise or after sunset, you have to prevent those blue wavelengths coming from bulbs and screens from entering the eyes. And I do that with orange toned blue blockers. These are yellow, believe it or not, right? People are like, those are yellow. Like, these are my daytime ones. But my nighttime ones are orange. And so lots of different options there. But you want to get a really good quality pair of orange tone blue blockers. You put them on first thing in the morning before you look at your cell phone, right before you go to the bathroom and flip on the lights. So you protect your eyes and then you go about your morning, which for me looks like waking up, getting some water, getting the kids situated, going to the bathroom, packing lunches, making sure everyone has all their home, all the things, right?
Yes, but Carrie's like a mom, if you guys didn't know, she has three children.
Yeah, I got three children. So I get it, right? I wouldn't even call it a luxury. I love being a mom, but I don't spend 3 hours outside every morning or like, you know, all the well-intentioned, lovely human beings who are like, well, I start my day off with an hour of meditation, followed by a cold plunge, followed by, I'm like,
what is that like?
I was like, yeah, you know, that's good for you. I'm really happy that that is what works for you. But yeah, so I get it, right? I get the busy life. And so what that's going to look like is blocking it. And then as soon as I'm driving my kids to school, I take the orange and blue blockers off because it's dangerous to drive with them on.
Yes.
Sometimes it's not sunrise yet. Okay. And it's okay. As soon as sunrise hits, and sometimes sunrise, it happens because I've got the sunroof open and the windows down, because windows will change the signaling. It's not ideal, right? We want windows open if at all possible. So sometimes I'm driving and it's sunrise time, or sometimes I get home or it's in the summer and I can, even before the kids go to school, I can step outside. My goal is to get 3 to 5 minutes with naked eyes outside. I don't have to sky gaze. I don't have to stare at the sun. I don't have to see the sun coming over the horizon. It could be cloudy, rainy, snowy, foggy. It doesn't matter. I'm just outside, and my eyes, because the moisture in my eyes actually helps to draw water or to draw the light in. Mm. And so that's all I have to do is be outside for about 3 to 5 minutes at sunrise. And I tell people you have about a 20-minute wiggle of time, sunrise plus 20 minutes, right? Give yourself a little bit of leeway, but it is key. If you're new to reestablishing your circadian rhythm and implementing these, it is important to get into that window of time consistently if possible. And then I'll go inside and maybe I'll do some work, computer work, which you see I mitigate with this. People don't necessarily have to. And then at UVA rise, which is another window of time, 20 minutes is ideal. There is such magic that happens at UVA rise. And I don't know if you've experienced any of that, but like, I just feel so good. If I typically schedule about a 20-minute walk, mm-hmm. then. And then I'm back here, right? And I'm in front of a computer. Now I try to take mini light breaks. So for me, right before we got on here, I ran upstairs, I peed, I went outside for literally 30 seconds and just got my body into the sun and went like this, you know? And yeah. So, you know, those little things do matter because my brain will sync up to the signals. And then picking my kids up from school in about an hour and a half, and I'll be with windows down in the parking lot, you know, just getting those light signals again. And then around sunset, I also try to go outside to signal to my brain the blue light is gone. And when sunset hits, I'll put the orange tone blue blockers back on. Middle of winter is a little bit more challenging if I'm like driving kids to and from practices and things like that. But ideally, as soon as I'm kind of home and settled, orange tone blue blockers go on and they stay on for the rest of the night. And that prevents the blue light from entering my eyes to signal that the day has started again. Because that's where hormone imbalances can also happen, at that end of the day. Because we're designed to get this surge of hormones in the morning. And then all of a sudden, the brain is like, wow, it's been a long day. I'm getting tired. And then we just, you know, you put on the TV or you look at your phone to try to unwind. that shock of blue light starts another cortisol surge that starts another hormone surge. And that's what keeps us kind of revved up, or like the symptom that I had with adrenal fatigue was tired, but wired.
Yeah.
Like I'm physically exhausted, but mentally I can't shut it down. And so that's what happens if we, so that's why we want to block that artificial light there. And that's why artificial light can be, it's really being tied to a lot of hormone imbalances these days, mm-hmm. Because that's what it does. That's how it dysregulates our hormones. It like surges them again as if it was a new day without ever having slept. So, I mean, I feel like if I can do that, the majority of people can, right? It's like block it with orange glasses when the sun's not there. When the sun's there, try to emphasize some good time outside in the morning, check in with the sun periodically, call it good. And then throughout the summer, I do try to get some full body sun exposure because I think it's important to also stimulate vitamin D and other things like that through the skin as well.
Yeah. And I just like, I love when you talk about it because you don't have the ideal schedule. And it's funny because I'll talk to a lot of moms and they're like, oh, I feel like I never get outside because I'm always like doing stuff for the kids, doing stuff around the house. And I'm like, it has to become a part of culture in your family, in your home. Yes. And I just did an episode recorded yesterday with one of my good friends on like how to build resiliency in motherhood. And it's like a lot of it is creating a different culture in your home because we do set the tone of our house, you know, as moms and like wives, spouses, whatever. Like, I feel like we do have more control in it. It just takes making little tiny changes. Like for me, like now that the time changed, it's like now my daughter gets up like super early. I used to do the sunrise by myself for a brief 2-month period when she started sleeping through the night. But now it's like we get up and I just quickly, I have to let the dogs out anyway. So we just stand out there. I do not put her down because I'll never be able to get her back inside to make breakfast. But it's like we stand outside. It's not even always perfectly at sunrise, but it's like close. It's usually a little bit before, but it's close enough. And it's like, take my glasses off. We're getting it in the eyes. I want her to get it too. Although kids are like much more resilient when it comes to that stuff. And like most things. And then like we make breakfast, we eat breakfast outside. And that's like how I get more time and like that light exposure. It's usually like a little bit before, a little bit after sunrise. And that has been absolutely wonderful. I'm in Florida, so obviously we can do that this time of year. I understand a lot of people can't, and I don't think you have to. I think like your rhythms and everything are going to shift with the seasons, right? And I think that's good even. So that's like how we get it in the morning, and then we typically like show independent play, all work, and then we go for a walk, and it's UVA time, which UVA has absolutely been transformational, I feel like, especially for thyroid. And it's one where it's like she wants to go outside around that time anyway. So it's like, I'm like, all right, I'll just work earlier, then we'll go out. And then I spend the most time inside when she's sleeping for her nap. So it's like, I do feel like I need a light break though, after that 2-hour chunk. I'm like, man, I really noticed the difference. And I used to go like 6 to 8 hours curled up in my office getting like zero light breaks. But I just love that it's like, it can be 30 seconds. It can be just you sticking your head out the window or opening a window. Like even the screen is fine. You just don't want the glass. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. And some days you might find, I had meetings back to back all day. I couldn't get as much light today. That's okay. Like, it's not about being perfect. It's just like, how can I consistently try to make this a part of my routine? And I think when people hear, like, we'll tell clients how it's only like a few minutes in the morning, they're like, that's it. I'm like, that's it. That's it. We don't need to be out there for 20 to 30 minutes. Like, if you can, cool, but you absolutely don't have to. And I think that brings a lot of relief. And that's why I was like, I definitely want Carrie to share her day, because I think most people will be like, that is doable. And even blocking it and stuff. And you can do the glasses. I think that's the easiest personally, especially like when you have other people in your house that are like turning on lights and stuff. It's like, there's only so much you can do. I mean, obviously you can get different light bulbs and things like that, but it's like the glasses are very practical, and no matter what environment you're in, they can work. So I think that's an important and hopefully not super intimidating way to get started with this. What you like the Viva Rays, right?
Yeah. I mean, I love the Viva Rays, but there's other really awesome brands too. And, you know, so this like kind of tying into parenthood, and even just, you know, with my husband, I never forced blue, black, and glasses on anybody in my family, mm-hmm. right? I just modeled the behavior. And it's so cool because my 12-year-old son and my husband both reach for them at a certain time of night. Like they know that if they were watching football together or something like that, that it just feels too intense to their eyes if they don't have the eye protection. So like, it's really awesome, right? Like this is just modeling behavior. And then they're starting to see, wow, actually that does feel good to me too. So frankly, for my husband and my kids, they love a brand off of Amazon called Spectra 479. They're like, almost like, you know, little wraparound rec specs. Like, you know, they're just very comfortable plastic. They're not expensive. They bend and they move, you know? And so they're very reasonable to then, we just have maybe 5 pairs all throughout the house and the kids will start to reach for them at a certain time of night. They know to put them on. And so even now my 7-year-old is also starting to, my 4-year-old was fed typically before there's any need to do that.
Yeah.
But you're right. We can do bulbs, you know, and then you can mitigate screens with you like making screens redder and things like that. But I do find like you said, kids are resilient, and there comes a certain time of the night where people, once they start to get a relationship with light, which sounds kind of corny, but like you start to interact more with your light environment, there's like this visceral response to what your body needs. Oh, I need time outside versus, ooh, that is just too intense for me. I have to block that. And so it's cool. You know, it just naturally happens.
I was at my sister's that we have like family visiting last night, and you know, all the cousins and stuff are there, lots of babies and kids. And like all of a sudden it's like, I could feel it. It's like dark out. She has a lot of windows in her house. And then there's like all these lights still on. And I'm like, God, I'm like, I feel weird. And then I'm like, find myself like dimming and shutting lights off. Cause I was like, that's what it is. Cause I mean, in our house, like it's just me and my 18-month-old right now, but when my husband's home, he's like the light police. So when I got into all this stuff, he's like, this is great. The light bill's going to be so low. Like that's like his concern. So he does not care about any of the benefits. He's just like, thinks it's great that I'm always like turning all the lights off and stuff. We've always kind of been like that. It's like, in my house growing up, my parents always did that. Like not even on purpose, but just like, okay, it's like, we want you guys to go to bed soon. So we're going to start to like calm down, make like a calming environment. Cause that blue light, it is stimulating, especially for kids. Let's talk about sleep. Let's get a little bit of this in before, and we'll talk about some tips for shift workers too. Cause I know people are probably thinking that. I cannot tell you how many people have trouble sleeping now. I mean, that's probably one of the main concerns outside of like hormones, fertility, gut health. Like, usually it's not always, it's sometimes it's number one for people, but it's always in there. Like in that intake form, I'm like, you don't sleep well, like at all. And it's, I feel like it's become normalized in our society. And so many people think it's like to be expected as you get older, but how can getting natural light, especially in the morning, help with our sleep at nighttime?
Yeah, it's a great way. No one ever thinks about it this way, but like, two things happen in the morning. When we get that light signaling and we start basically that communication happening, that's like the start of daytime. And our brain then the brain metabolism revs up. And so we really start to have, we have a timing mechanism in our brain based on a chemical called adenosine that literally pretty much starts to build up from then until about 14 to 16 hours later. It needs to be elevated in the brain in order to help us fall asleep. So that's one. But then with that morning light, specifically that UVA light, we start to make serotonin, right? That UVA light is a very key pathway in which we take a breakdown product of melatonin. So we make melatonin when we sleep. That melatonin breaks down into an amino acid called tryptophan. And then that tryptophan, using the light energy from UV light, becomes serotonin. And that serotonin pool that we build in with morning light will then become melatonin when we experience darkness. And so that's a whole cycle, right? You go to sleep at night with your melatonin elevated. You break it down into this amino acid that makes you feel groggy, which is why people who don't get that morning light tend to feel like are slow starters. That's one of the questions on my questionnaire, right? Are you a slow starter in the morning? Well, you know, if you're a slow starter, maybe you're not converting that tryptophan into serotonin efficiently. So then you're designed to convert that tryptophan into serotonin, feel pretty darn good, right? When that serotonin is balanced, that window of time also balances dopamine, norepinephrine, which is great for focus and concentration. But that serotonin then, like I said, you build up enough of it to become melatonin. The other part about that serotonin, which I think not a lot of people realize, but that serotonin also works on gut motility. right? So that's our gut. We hear, oh, you make the majority of your serotonin in your gut. Yeah, you do. But the light signaling needs to happen through the eyes, right? That circadian signaling needs to happen. And so then it helps with bowel movements, and that balances the gut microbiome and all the things, right? All of it's connected to the light signaling. And so that serotonin is key because you make that melatonin at night, but you only turn it into melatonin at night if you block the artificial light, because artificial light exposure will suppress melatonin 80% or more. So that's why I think we're seeing such an epidemic of all of these interrelated things, right? First and foremost, gut health, infertility, but also a lot of anxiety and depression, or, you know, neurochemical dysregulation can happen as well. And a lot of it has a light signature, a light connection. And so if we're not blocking the artificial light at night, we're suppressing our melatonin, we're elevating cortisol. That's actually, at that time of night, that actually drives anxiety. So I've had a lot of clients who are dealing with insomnia who also start to feel anxious or on edge at night. And so if we block that artificial light at night, the serotonin begins to get converted into melatonin. It not only puts us asleep, but then it runs some major repair programs. It's a huge antioxidant. So it runs some major repair programs when we are asleep, so that we basically wake up refreshed and feeling better. So we can stay in a deep sleep. We can go into the deep phases of sleep where we are doing that deep tissue repair, and our body heals at night. It truly heals at night when we are asleep.
And melatonin is so important for fertility too. You know, I've read some really cool research articles. I mean, obviously they're like doing supplementation, but it's like, if you think it's like, why would we need to supplement? But I wanted to specifically cover that, because I feel like a lot of times people are like, well, I do block light at night, and I won't use my phone at this many hours before bed and stuff, and I'm still having trouble sleeping. And I'm like, but are you getting light in the morning? Is the question, because again, that it's like helping to build it up. And it's just because a lot of people think, oh, it's yes, your pineal gland absolutely makes melatonin. Your gut is definitely going to affect melatonin, but light affects both of those. it has such a big impact. And having a healthy circadian rhythm, that's huge for digestion, and having good digestion, which, you know, once your digestion's compromised, your gut health, it cascades from there and goes downhill. We only have time for one more, and I'm trying to think, do I want to do shift workers? I feel like we should do winter, because we'll do shift workers for the Q&A, because I know I have someone in there that is a shift worker that asked about it. Because when this comes out, it's going to be December. So we're full on winter. You're in Michigan, right? Yeah. So
full
like
on winter.
You've been in winter, right? I'm like barely, it was like 50s this morning, and I was like, ooh, it's chilly outside. But it's like nice to feel cold for once. Let's talk about, like, do you have tips for winter? Because obviously light exposure is a lot easier in the summer months. Spring, it just, there's more light, there's more opportunity. How do you get it in the morning time in the winter, or how do you get it throughout the day and kind of balance that out?
It's still important, right? But here's what I think people need to realize even more in the winter, is that you have to honor the darkness, because winter is a time of darkness, which means we can make more melatonin. We can repair a ton. So in the summer, less melatonin, more vitamin D opportunities to be made. In the winter, I can't make any vitamin D where I live, but massive amounts of melatonin. And so if we can kind of just shift our brains into being like, maybe now is an okay time to turn down a late dinner party, right? Or maybe kind of shift your routine. Like, friends and family know, like, it has to be like between breakfast and an early dinner, basically, if you want to hang out with me, like 7 o'clock at night, no way. I think we just have to recognize that it's okay to be a little bit more tired in the winter. And we have to look at it as an opportunity. So I'm just really more diligent about blocking artificial light at night in the winter. And then also getting the light when I can, because I used to have seasonal affective disorder, and I had this bright old light box on my desk, and it kind of shocked me awake. Right. And I did feel a little bit more energized, but it doesn't feel anywhere near what it feels like to still go outside in morning time in the winter. You still just got to do it. And I don't care if it's gray, right? If it's gray outside, it still is going to be 10,000 times brighter than it is in your interior environment. Mm-hmm. And not only do you get that bright signaling, which is what a light box does, that stimulates dopamine and, you know, makes us feel better and more energized, but we also get the actual signals from the light, all of the colors from the light. Whereas this light box is just like, you know, this vicious amount of one type of light entering my eyes, I can get the same thing from nature. So just because it's cold, just because it's gray, we still have to go outside. And so if we can do that and still make sure, make that a priority in the winter, that is how seasonal affective disorder disappears. That's how we actually get some really deep repair by maybe saying, okay, it's okay to go to bed early if my schedule allows and my body feels the need to. Then that's where it's like, winter's an opportunity. I can still stay happy and energized when I get into the light, but I can also honor the fatigue that I might experience earlier in the evening as an opportunity.
Yeah. And I feel like people talk about eating seasonally and like the shifts of the seasons. I'm like, our lifestyle can shift with that as well. I mean, think about it. It's like this time of year, it's like, you know, even when I had family visiting and stuff, I'm like, I want to slow down. I want to like be more present and like have our days definitely feel like shorter somehow. Cause like the darkness and everything's starting to change, but it's like, that's okay. It's okay to do less if you can. And then just maybe like you didn't quite plan for it. If you have kids and they're in a bunch of things, maybe the next year you rethink that and you're like, how did that serve us? Like, how did it serve the kids? Is it something that we want to continue with? Or do we want to maybe load more things in the summertime, whatever that might be. But I just love to mention that. I love when you talk about that because I'm like, it is so true. It could be a season of deep restoration, but a lot of times we just don't like people like they're like, I need vitamin D supplements. I need or vitamin D light or something like that. And it's like, but do you, is this like the most appropriate thing for your body during this time of year? Or could it potentially be very confusing?
For me to say one thing? Now we know that the research is showing that melatonin docks to the vitamin D receptor. So melatonin and the vitamin D receptor was misnamed. It was named vitamin D receptor when we only thought that one thing docked to it, meaning that the benefits of vitamin D are also also achieved by melatonin. So we can get them both, but like we try to live in perpetual summer all winter mm-hmm. long. We elevate the temperature. We're not aware of all the brightness of our light environment. Mm-hmm. And so if we can honor the winter and support melatonin levels in our bodies, we get the same benefits.
Yeah. And it's okay to be cold. Just want to say that. I know I live in the South, guys. I know. But I'm from Connecticut. So I spent my whole life being very cold. It didn't matter. My mom had a home daycare. We were always outside. It didn't matter if it was like a ton of snow. We all had snowsuits. It's like we lived outside growing up and the time of year didn't change that. And I know that that can be challenging with kids. There can be more of a mess. It can change things, but I think it's so helpful to hear this perspective and I hope that it shifts things for people, maybe gets you thinking a little differently and not so scared. Cause I think there's a lot of fear around vitamin D levels in the winter and illness and that sort of thing. And I'm like, I'd be way more concerned with that perpetual summer and having that have a negative effect on immune system function and stress in the body and inflammation versus like trying to keep vitamin D levels within a certain range. And I have heard you talk about vitamin D, and Carrie, if you will come back on, you are going to come back on and we're going to do a podcast on this because I get a lot of questions. I don't love vitamin D. I think it can be appropriate in low doses in certain situations, but I'm like, no one understands vitamin D. And I've talked about how it's more like a hormone and everything, and it has like cofactors and all that stuff. But when you bring light into the picture, it's like there's even more, guys. So I'll have Carrie come back on and we'll talk about vitamin D. That was a little teaser that melatonin also binds to the vitamin D receptors. Fascinating. We're going to go record the Patreon Q&A now. So we'll cover the shift worker question there. We have a lot of great questions from listeners. So if you guys want to get access to the Patreon bonus episode, you can go to patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. But thank you, Carrie, for coming on the podcast. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks for having me, Amanda. Yeah, let's do this again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Are You Menstrual podcast. If you want to support my work, please leave a review and let me know how you like the episode. This lets me know like what you guys want more of, less of. I read every single one and I appreciate them more than you know. If you want to keep learning, you can get access to the bonus episode and additional resources on patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. I'd love to have you in there. Thanks again, and I will see you in the next episode.